This is Free Thought Radio with co-hosts Dan Barker and Annie Laurie Gaylor. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews.
Imagine there's no heaven. It's easy if you try.
Welcome to the month of March. Sports has its March madness, but on Free Thought Radio, we'll aim to make this a month of March sanity in matters of non-belief and the separation of government from religion.
And I'm Dan Barker, your friendly neighborhood atheist. This is March the 1st, 2004, broadcast of Free Thought Radio, and we are listening to, get it, The Grand March. That's from Aida by Giuseppe Verdi. Verdi, as most listeners of this show know, was an atheist. Free Thought Radio is produced in Madison, Wisconsin. If you're listening to us on the podcast, you might want to tune in as it's being broadcast in real time, Saturday mornings at 11. And through iHeartRadio, you can listen to the stream of the show. And some of the other stations that broadcast our show also have streaming. We're broadcast in California. Free Thought Radio is broadcast in New York State, in Michigan, in Missouri, and in Texas.
And Free Thought Radio is the weekly production of FFRF, which stands for the Freedom From Religion Foundation. And we have two purposes: to educate the public about non-theism. Therefore, we're a membership organization of non-believers, atheists, agnostics, skeptics, and so on, over 20,000. And we have members in every state, in every province, and some internationally. And our purpose is to keep religion out of government. And we have a 14-member staff, including 5 staff attorneys, who are working to do just that.
And we're going to talk about that today. We're going to talk with Rob Boston. He's with Americans United for Separation of Church and State, another group that works for that purpose. He's the director of communications for AU. And he has a brand new book that's just out this month, in early March, March the 4th, I think. His new book is called Taking Liberties, Why Religious Freedom Doesn't Give You the Right to Tell Other People What to Do.
And Rob's latest book is just being released this week, so that's fun to have him on the show. And it couldn't be more timely with the outcry this past week over that Arizona bill that was just vetoed by Governor Jan Brewer, and I had dubbed that the Give Religious Bigots a Pass bill. Uh-huh. And as you know, the Arizona legislature had passed this bill that its intent was to allow business owners to invoke personal religious beliefs as an excuse to deny gays service. And this prompted one witty Tucson pizzeria owner to put up what became a very famous sign saying, "We reserve the right to refuse service to Arizona legislators." And of course, there was an outcry. We're talking about corporate outcry, the football leagues, Apple, you name it, corporate, even John McCain.
Wasn't the
Republicans
Hispanic
changing their minds?
Conference canceled.
Was canceled, and FFRF put out an action alert and a statement. And reason did prevail when Jan Brewer, late on Wednesday, vetoed the bill. But it's a very dangerous kind of bill because there are similar so-called religious protection legislation bills that have been introduced around the country. This is a concerted campaign. Idaho, Mississippi, Ohio, Oklahoma, South Dakota, Tennessee, Kansas, and more in the works. And we hope this will stop them in their tracks. But although this bill was couched as anti-gay, it's so broad that it would allow any person, business, or church to cite religion as a defense if the government or someone else claims that they're being discriminated against by them. So think of those floral shops in Rhode Island that wouldn't let FFRF order a bouquet of roses for Jessica Alquist. You could medical doctors, hospitals, you name it, could say, "Well, I'm not going to help you. I'm not going to sell you food."
Taxi drivers, I'm not going to pick up a woman who's traveling alone if a Muslim driver, for example.
Whatever, it would trump the Civil Rights Act, and so fortunately, we did see reason prevail. But we are looking for that Hobby Lobby oral arguments in March about the same thing. And so this is a huge issue.
So they're trying to say it's a matter of religious rights. It's really a matter of civil rights. Now, as we talked about last week on the show, we were successful. The Freedom From Religion Foundation was successful in getting Iowa State University to remove Gideon Bibles from their hotel rooms. Did you see that nice letter we got from Hector Avalos? He's a professor there thanking us.
In Iowa.
At Iowa State University. And they said it was going to happen today on March the 1st. So
I'm sure it will. They were moving into what they call their browsing library, which is a large little, it's a little room with a large library. So long as there are other books there, that's fine.
So if you live in Iowa, go book a room there tonight and see what happens.
This is in Ames.
Well, this issue made national news. And the same thing happened here in the University of Wisconsin over the campus
Lowell Center. Yes, after FFRF complained, that was Patrick Elliott.
That made national news, but this Iowa State made huge news, including Annie Laurie. You were interviewed on the Sean Hannity Show, which we played the audio of last week for you on Freethought Radio. And then Tony Perkins of the Family Research Council, which is a right-wing religious group. Some people call it a hate group because they're so anti-gay. Tony Perkins was invited on Fox News to talk about our victory, about this issue. We were not invited, of course, but he was invited to talk about our victory over Bibles in the public institution. Here he is talking with the host, Megyn Kelly, last Tuesday.
Well, a hotel in the Heartland has decided no more Bibles. The decision comes after the group Freedom From Religion Foundation complained that the Bibles should be banned at the Iowa State University Hotel.
This is a hostility toward religion. Let me read you from their statement, crowing about this decision. "We are delighted to see reason and the Constitution prevailing. We can all sleep easier knowing secularism is being honored at our public university," said the co-president, Annie Laurie Gaylor. "Many non-believers greatly object to its primitive and dangerous instructions to beat children, kill homosexuals, atheists, and infidels, and it sanctions the subjugation of women who are scapegoated for bringing sin and death into the world." I have to question, did they ever read that book, the Bible? Because that's not in the Bible.
So talk about Bible libel. Tony Perkins obviously hasn't read his Bible. Dan, what are your credentials?
Well, actually, you know, I was an ordained minister. I preached from every book of the Bible for 19 years, and I've written some books with heavy criticism of the Bible. And
Just Pretend for Children, you've written
Losing Faith in Faith, my book Godless,
The Good Atheist.
And, you know, I'm not a great expert. In fact, we wrote a letter to Tony Perkins in which I said, neither of us is the great expert, but at least I can translate from the Greek, and we have read the Bible. We know what it says. And Annie Laurie, you too.
Well, yeah, I've read it cover to cover. It was quite a masochistic undertaking, and I studied it and referenced it, and I wrote a book. It's still available, Woe to the Women, The Bible Tells Me So, that FFRF publishes. I also edited Women Without Superstition, which is an anthology of women freethinkers, a lot of Bible criticism there. Know Your Enemy was, as a feminist, was my motivation. Know what the Bible says, because there's no, it's a handbook for women's subjugation. And so I think what we want to do is kind of rebut Tony Perkins said.
You know, because your letter says, the Bible says to beat children, kill homosexuals, atheists, and infidels, and the subjugation of women. So we sent a letter to Tony Perkins.
And we...
educating him about, in fact, the Bible does say this.
And let me just start with the subjugation of women. Unto the woman, this is Genesis. By the third chapter of Genesis, woman has lost her identity, been blamed for bringing sin and death into the world. This is supposed to be the deity. "I will greatly multiply thy sorrow and thy conception. In sorrow thou shalt bring forth children, and thy desire shall be to thy husband, and he shall rule over thee." And then you skip to the New Testament, and it's even worse. It's wives, submit yourselves, over and over again. I think the most hated one is, "Let the woman learn in silence with all subjection. But I suffer not a woman to teach, nor to usurp authority over the man, but to be in silence. For Adam was the first formed, then Eve. And Adam was not deceived, but the woman being deceived was in the transgression."
Scapegoating.
It's scapegoating. It's all over the New Testament, and I don't think I need the, as the head of every man is Christ, the head of the woman is the man. Talk about deifying, you know, patriarchy.
And that word submit is the same word used to tell slaves to submit to their masters and children to submit to their elders. We can't read it. You can read our whole letter online if you want, but here's a sampling of beating children in the Bible. In Proverbs 23, if you strike the child with a rod, he will not die. Don't withhold discipline. And in the New Testament, for whom the Lord loves, he scourges. That means he beats him with a whip. Every son. What son is there whom a father does not chasten?
It's over and over again.
And then about killing children, which Tony Perkins says is not in the Bible. Exodus 21, he that smites his father or mother shall surely be put to death. He that curses father or mother shall be put to death.
The stubborn sons are supposed to be put to death. And then what? And read that psalm.
Well,
passage.
Psalm 137:9 is talking about the children of the enemies, but it says, happy shall be he that takes and dashes the little ones against the stones. And
well, does it matter whether it's Hebrew children or children of enemies? Should you be killing children?
In any event, what fault is it of theirs? The Bible does say to kill children. And then to kill homosexuals. Tony Perkins, obviously, he hates homosexuals because of this verse, and yet he accuses us of not knowing our Bible, which says in Leviticus 20:13, if a man has sexual relations with a man as one does with a woman, both of them have done what is detestable, they are to be put to death. Their blood will be on their own heads. Have you read the Bible, Tony
Perkins?
And then
the King James Version says homosexuality is an abomination.
Yeah.
I don't know what verse you were.
Well, no, it's
version.
A couple chapters before that. It says that in the same. And then
which is what I said on the Hannity program. And then I also said that I don't appreciate walking into a hotel room to find a so-called holy book in there that actually instructs that I should be put to death. And Dan, why don't you read the passages about that?
Well, there's a whole bunch of passages that say unbelievers, infidels, and blasphemers shall be put to death. As the Lord spake to Moses in Leviticus 24, he that blasphemes the name of the Lord, he shall surely be put to death, and all the congregation shall certainly stone him. And then there's a whole bunch of things in Deuteronomy and Chronicles about if you go after another religion, the religion of the enemy tribes, then that person shall be stoned to death. Anyone who converts and believes like the infidels shall be put to death. Stone him with stones that he die. You can read all these citations.
Blasphemers, and that is, you know, a lot of people don't realize that the Hebrew Bible, which Christians call the Old Testament, is shared in common by the three Abrahamic religions. So Christianity, Muslim, and Jewish share many of these core teachings, the so-called Mosaic Law. Where do you think the Islamists got the idea that they could put to death Salman Rushdie? He's a blasphemer. That is shared in common by all the religions, that even if they don't want to acknowledge it, they think it's a holy word, and then they want to cherry pick, that must be the Muslims, they're bad, but our religion is good. And it's actually all in common. And this is a book that, like Nietzsche, after I read it, I wanted to wash my hands. The brutality, the bloodshed, the cruelty, the vindictiveness, the mass murders ordered and executed by the biblical deity or in the name of the biblical deity.
And that's in the hotel
room.
They go
on and on. And yes, and this is in the hotel room. And I'm supposed to pay all this money and then not be insulted when I walk into a hotel room and find this.
We end our letter.
No, thank you.
We end our letter that we wrote to Tony Perkins with this thought. The Bible calls us non-believers fools in Psalm 14:1. The fool said in his heart, there's no God. The Bible says we non-believers are all filthy. We are corrupt. We have never done a good thing. What if there was a book in the drawers at hotels that said all Jews are filthy or all Christians are mentally ill? Do you think there would be no complaints about a hotel taking a stance, or especially a government-owned hotel?
Yeah, libeling a whole class of people and saying there is not one good. None of them have done one good thing. That's in Psalm 14:1, is it?
14:1, yeah. That, no,
a very
Psalm
famous
14.
Verse. So, hey, Tony Perkins, he should be debating you. You should, come on.
Well,
who would win that debate?
Our letter has a lot more. You can read about it online at our press releases, our letter
FFRF.org/news.
So this is Verdi. Tomorrow, the Washington Chorus is actually going to be performing some Verdi at the Kennedy Center, Washington, D.C. Stay tuned for more Free Thought Radio. We're going to hear Rob Boston. We're going to talk with him. He's the Director of Communications for Americans United for for the Separation of Church and State. He has a brand new book about religious liberties called Taking Liberties. I'm Dan Barker with Annie Laurie Gaylor.
I know. We'll have a little teaser about the Oscar in the next segment before we talk to Rob Boston, so stay tuned.
Ask for a sample issue of Free Thought today and find out more about the Freedom From Religion Foundation at ffrf.org or phone 1-800-335-4021. This is Free Thought Radio.
I'm Dan Barker.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor.
In a minute, Annie Laurie wants to talk about the Academy Awards, a movie that's up, Free Thought in the Movies. Remember at the Golden Globes a few years ago, Ricky Gervais got up and said something.
Well, he was the MC and he made some free-thinking remarks.
Right. He was on the Piers Morgan Tonight Show last fall, and he made a really eloquent remark about the value of life. Listen to this comment of his.
Because anyone who follows you on Twitter, and you have a huge following, they'll know that you are a pathological atheist, and therefore the thought of death is very final for you. For me, as a good Irish Catholic boy, it's the start of something new and glorious. For you, that's it.
For me, it's the end of something glorious, so I have to pack it all in. But, you know, I'm not depressed about it. I don't want to die any more than anyone else. And I think there's this strange myth that atheists have nothing to live for. It's the opposite. We have nothing to die for.
We have more to live for.
We have everything to live for.
Yes.
Yeah.
I would imagine you have a more focused attention to life because you think it ends when you die.
I think it's precious. I think it's beautiful. I think the world is amazing. I love people, animals, art, every hobby. I can't believe my luck that I'm alive for these 70 or 80 years. Might be less. I'm not long for this world.
I love that comment. We have nothing to die for. We atheists have everything to live for.
So speaking of awards and movies, of course, the Academy Awards tomorrow, the Oscar, and I'm rooting for 12 Years a Slave for Best Picture. It deserves it. And I'm rooting for Judi Dench as Best Actress for Philomena, which was also a marvelous movie, also up for Best Picture. It would make me very happy for that one as well. And this, of course, is the true story written. It's a nonfiction book by a journalist about how he and this woman went on a hunt for the son she had lost. She was committed to the Magdalene Sisters Laundry. They took away her son, and for years and years, she could not find him. And this it's a beautiful story. Go see it if you haven't seen it yet. And here's the teaser.
They said that you had abandoned him as a baby.
I did not abandon my child. You'll be 50 today.
Who is it?
I know this woman. She had a baby when she was a teenager, and she's kept it secret for 50 years.
I'd feel more comfortable if I could speak to Philomena in private.
You're a journalist.
Well, I used to be.
Martian's a Roman Catholic.
Well, no, I used to be. There are avenues we can pursue in America.
I'm getting the royal treatment, Martian. I feel like the Pope. I only want to know if he's all right.
What if he died in Vietnam? Or what if he was obese?
What on earth makes you think he'd be obese?
Because of the size of the portions.
I met him.
Where?
At the White House.
Did you remember anything he said?
Hello.
Hello. Hello.
He might have been high.
Oh, Martin! I just want to talk to you about my son. He was taken from me. And I've been looking for him ever since.
Why would God bestow upon us a sexual desire that he then wants us to resist?
So that was Steve Coogan playing the journalist, does a really good job as well. And Judi Dench, the 80-plus mother looking for the son that was taken away from her. And this is it's an easy-to-watch movie. It's not as difficult to watch as The Magdalene Sisters, which is also a wonderful movie, a fictional account of what happened to so many Irish young women. Brutalized in these, enslaved in these laundries for peccadilloes that don't really exist. And
there's a great tension in the movie because Judi Dench's character pretty much stays loyal to the church in spite of how they mistreated her. But the journalist
lets them have it.
Is the skeptic, you know.
Yes.
So you'll see all of that in the movie.
And a lot of humor in it, and very much worth watching, whether they win any awards or not. So
stay tuned. I'm Dan Barker.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor, and we are going to talk on the phone. It's been quite a while. With Rob Boston, the Director of Communications for Americans United for Separation of Church and State, and celebrate the release this week of his newest book, Taking Liberties, Why Religious Freedom Doesn't Give You the Right to Tell Other People What to Do. Hear, hear.
The things that you're liable to read in the Bible, it ain't necessarily so. This is Free Thought Radio.
I'm Dan Barker.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor.
Robert Boston is the Senior Policy Analyst for Americans United for Separation of Church and State. And you can tell from the name of their group what they do, keeping state and church separate. He's also the assistant editor of their magazine called Church and State. He covers the United States Supreme Court for Church and State. And I think this is amazing. He's attended the oral arguments in every church-state case at the High Court since 1988. He's written a number of books, and we have all of them in our library at Freethought Hall. In 2000, he wrote a book called Close Encounters with the Religious Right, Journeys into the Twilight Zone of Religion and Politics. And then he also wrote a book called The Most Dangerous Man in America. It was about Pat Robertson. And my favorite so far in 1993 and then 2003, Why the Religious Right is Wrong, about the separation of church and state. He has a new book out now, which is just being released this week. It's called Taking Liberties, a great title, Taking Liberties, Why Religious Freedom Doesn't Give You the Right to Tell Other People What to Do.
So welcome back to Free Thought Radio, Rob.
Thanks for having me on.
Now talk about timely release of your book. You must have been smiling this week, or once Jan Brewer vetoed the Arizona bill, about the release and how timely your book is.
Yes, there certainly has been a lot of talk about these issues, and I think that will continue. So the timing is good because a lot of the things that are being discussed right now in the media are exactly what this book deals with. What are the limits of religious freedom? What rights does it grant you? What rights does it not grant you? The whole point of the book was to try to set down some common sense parameters so that we can stop having fights like this that we've been seeing in some of the states recently.
Just like that old kid's song, your rights stop at the end of my nose.
Well, you know, the original title for this book was You're Not the Boss of Me. Because I kind of felt sometimes that that's the view you get from some of these really aggressive fundamentalist religious groups. They want to be the boss of you. I mean, it's not enough for them to control their own lives, which, of course, we would all agree with. They have that right. But they always want to control other people's lives as well. And there we have to draw the line.
We want them to focus on their own darn family, mm-hmm. right?
Was that the song from the Malcolm in the Middle show, You're Not the Boss of Me? Remember that?
There's also, it's not just the states, but it's also, you've got the we've got the upcoming oral arguments this month, at the end of the month, on the Hobby Lobby lawsuit against Sebelius, which is the same principle.
That is the same principle, and that worries me, that case, because if the Supreme Court rules in favor of Hobby Lobby in that situation, they really could be allowing some of these religious groups to just run over the rights of the rest of us. When Governor Brewer in Arizona last week vetoed that bill, a lot of people said, okay, great, wonderful, we're happy she did that. But the Supreme Court might, in fact, create such a wide latitude or a wide definition of religious liberty that they might allow some of the things that were in that bill that were vetoed.
I'm hoping that the Supreme Court took note of the outcry. I mean, they don't exist in a vacuum. It couldn't hurt that they would see how unpopular that bill was.
Well, I think you have a good point there. I mean, certainly there was a lot of pushback against that bill. And what was interesting about it was it came from so many different places. I mean, it was to be expected that the more liberal people would be concerned about this, and Democrats and progressives. But we also saw a massive outpouring from the business community in Arizona. It was very concerned about the possibility of things like boycotts and lost revenue. I do think in the long run, the culture is going to take care of these matters. No matter what the court says in this particular case, there's obviously a tide building in this country where the types of discrimination that we have seen against gays and lesbians in the past simply isn't going to be tolerated anymore. I mean, you can look at the polling data, and among the younger people, it's not even a close question.
And now
so
even
that will happen.
Even Republicans are split on this now.
Yeah, well, I saw something the other day, Dan, that amazed me. They did a poll by region of the country, and even in the South, the Deep South, it was an even split. That's pretty surprising. So this matter will be taken care of, but of course, a bad Supreme Court ruling just gums things up and makes it difficult for us to advance on other areas. And one thing we have to remember here is bills like the one we saw in Arizona, that's not just gays and lesbians.
Right.
Basically, the way I read that bill, if a shop owner, a hotel owner, a restaurant, he had some kind of moral problem with the way you're living your life, say you're a woman who's pregnant out of wedlock, or you're an unmarried couple that wants a room, too bad. He could just say, well, I'm not serving you, and we just can't. We move beyond that. We can't go back.
But I want to say, we should move on to something else, but before we end the Hobby Lobby discussion, we are seeing this religious war against women's rights that we've never seen, this kind of pushback. And so we've seen some headway in gay rights, but we seem to be losing ground at the same time on women's rights. And it's that fundamental right to control your own body that is at heart with Hobby Lobby.
Yes,
and we have
absolutely.
A male-dominated Catholic Supreme Court, so it's scary.
Oh, absolutely. In the book, I talk about that. And there's a reason that they're coming after birth control, because the power to control reproduction is the power to control a woman's life. And they know that. The conservative religious groups have known that for a long time. And you have to remember, as I'm sure you know from the research you two have done, for centuries, the church did control women's lives that way. And then they lost that power in the modern era with the invention of safe, affordable methods of birth control. It must have been remarkable to them when this issue reopened again. I mean, most Americans looked at this as kind of a settled thing.
Yeah.
Yet here we are, under the guise of religious liberty, ironically, on the verge of maybe taking away some of these hard-fought rights. We really have to stand up and be active.
Right, and I think that many young women who have no recollection of what it was like before abortion was illegal and where contraception was often hard to get, they don't realize how quickly they could lose this right.
Yes, you're absolutely right about that. When I speak about these issues and I tell people about the Griswold case, the younger people in the audience are always puzzled. They haven't heard of it. They don't know what it's like. And when I tell them, you know, in many states, it was even illegal for married couples to get birth control, they're shocked. They're definitely taking these things for granted, and we have to keep working to help the younger people understand that just because they have rights now doesn't mean they always will. They can be taken away if we're not careful.
Griswold versus Connecticut. That was in Hartford where that happened on birth control.
Yeah, it was 65.
So,
yes.
So I want to talk about your book some more, but is it true you've gone to every single oral argument since 88?
There are a couple that I missed. That bio that you're reading might be a little bit old. I remember missing one because my wife was in labor, so I had a pretty good excuse on that one.
Well, did they have is your name on a chair there in the Supreme Court?
I've tried to attend all the church-state arguments on the church-state cases because we obviously do a lot of writing about those and want to watch those very carefully. So I've tried to attend them all. I have missed a few, but it's always fascinating to watch the Supreme Court in action. And I'm not a lawyer, but every time I go to those arguments, I feel sorry for those lawyers because they really rip them apart sometimes.
Well, you were there with our Hind case back in 2006.
Yes.
Then. So, now, the subtitle of your book, this is great, Why Religious Freedom Doesn't Give You the Right to Tell Other People What to Do. You spend a lot of time in the book discussing that phrase, religious freedom, which means one thing to you and me, but something else entirely to the religious right.
Yes, to me, religious freedom is it's the right to worship or not, as you see fit, guided by conscience, to join with other people who feel the same way you do, to do that unmolested by the state as long as you're following the secular laws. But increasingly, we're getting this different vision of religious freedom that somehow people are saying it's a mechanism to control other people, to tell them what to do, to meddle in their personal decisions. And this discussion we've been having about birth control is a perfect example of that. I fail to see how it affects the corporation owner and his religious freedom one iota because some of his employees are using birth control. It's none of his business. That's their private matter. That doesn't stop him from going to church. It doesn't stop him from praying. It doesn't stop him from singing hymns or reading the Bible. He gets to do all that stuff. He's not even being required in some cases to pay for it, birth control directly. So a lot of people are just somehow arguing, somehow the actions of others negatively affects them. And there's a long strain of thinking about that in this country. And I try to make that point in this book. People have raised these religious freedom arguments time and time again as a mechanism to control other people. And that's what we have to stand up against.
Aren't they saying they don't want to participate in even facilitating someone else engaging in this evil activity?
Yes, but it just gets to be such a silly argument. I mean, you could argue that the paycheck that an employer gives you, there's no telling what you might do with that.
Right.
You know, you could buy all manner of birth control. You could buy pornography. You could do all kinds of things with it they don't like. Well, at a certain point, you know, I don't want to hear any more of this kind of, you know, Jesuitical reasoning. You are not complicit in someone else's private decisions that they have made, and that's the best way, I think, to deal with these things.
And then vouchers is, you know, there's that terrible voucher bill right now in Congress. It's surely going to be defeated, but it's that same idea where you're being persecuted if the government doesn't fund your religious point of view.
Yes, that's an argument that has been made for a long time, too. The Catholic Church, the hierarchy, actually, has got that one down to an art. They've argued over the years that, you know, it's not enough that their schools exist and they're basically unregulated by the state. Nobody messes with what they're doing in there. But now they're saying, well, you have to fund us, too, or we can't exercise our religious freedom because we can't afford, some of our members can't afford to pay for this private religious education, so the government has to help us. It's just a ridiculous argument. The state's job, basically, is to step back from religious groups to the largest extent possible, keep its hands off unless there's some kind of evidence of lawbreaking, not meddle in those things. But as far as paying for it, that's the job of the men and women sitting in the pew, and if they choose not to pay for it, then the church leaders ought to realize that maybe they should change what they're doing because people really care about it, they'll support it.
Well, amen, Brother Boston. And I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor here with Dan Barker, and we are going to come back after this break to talk more with you, Rob. And also, I think we're going to have your reaction to a recent statement by Tom DeLay about who wrote the Constitution.
And this is Elvis Costello from his album Taking Liberties, which is the same title as your book.
As Mark Twain said, faith is believing what you know ain't so. This is Free Thought Radio.
We're back. I'm Dan Barker.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor, and our guest today is Rob Boston, who has a book, Talk About Timely, this week released, saying the title is Taking Liberties, Why Religious Freedom Doesn't Give You the Right to Tell Other People What to Do. And Rob, congratulations on this book, and how can people get hold of it?
Well, they can get it through Amazon, Barnes & Noble, major bookstores. I've also got a site, robertboston.com. Which tells a little more about the book, and there's a link there to Amazon as well.
And the book has a comprehensive spectrum of state church issues and also a really nice history. In an earlier book, you wrote a bigger history of state church issues, but a quite interesting overview of the history of the state church separation.
Now, yeah, I think that's really important to look at that. You know, we have to know all that's at stake. So many people trying to rewrite the history and replace it with this Christian nation stuff that I just feel it's always necessary to debunk that early on.
So talk about perfect lead-in of former House Majority Leader Tom DeLay recently made remarks, it was last week, urging Americans to realize that God wrote the Constitution. This was during an interview on John Hagee Ministries Global Evangelism TV network. And we actually have that clip.
I think we got off the track when we allowed our government to become a secular government. When we stop realizing that God created this nation, that he wrote the Constitution, that it's based on biblical principles.
So, of course, we have a godless constitution, but this is the kind of thing that you're addressing in your book, right, Rob?
Yes, exactly, because you hear that a lot. As you know very well, there's no mention of God in the Constitution. There's no mention of Jesus. There's no mention of Christianity. The only two references to religion are Article 6 and the First Amendment. Yet you have people saying this sort of thing. And what's really discouraging about it is that he's totally dissing James Madison, who actually did write the Constitution. So you got to give props to Mr. Madison. It's his handiwork.
Unless Madison is God.
Well, our city, Madison here, was named for Madison. So he rates pretty highly. So we have been talking about these so-called religious freedom bills, like in Arizona, the Hobby Lobby contraceptive mandate challenge. Do you see these as the most pernicious threats right now, or what else do you see as a problem?
Well, these are certainly they're a huge problem, and this is kind of the next wave, this attempt to redefine religious liberty. I think what's happening is the religious right groups and the Catholic bishops realize that they are on the losing end of history and that the cultural tide is strongly running against them. So they're just grasping whatever they can to try to keep themselves afloat, and this religious liberty argument is what they've got a hold of. Now, unfortunately, right now, they might have a sympathetic Supreme Court, so it's unfortunate, but we may have to deal with that. But aside from that issue, we constantly have these threats of school voucher funding, tax funding for religion, faith-based initiatives. And as you know, always there are threats to the religious neutrality of the public school system. We're always fighting against creationism, efforts to bring official prayer back into the schools, that sort of thing. So it is a constant struggle.
And you write about
any of these matters are really solved.
Yeah, you write about also targeting schools as mission fields, the Good News Club angle.
Yes, exactly. The what we're seeing here, I think, these days from the religious right and their allies is that they know that it's unlikely they're going to get a school prayer amendment passed to the Constitution or anything like that. So they're trying all this backdoor stuff, bringing evangelists into the school to, give a talk about drugs or suicide. And then, of course, they spend all the time preaching.
I used to do that.
That's the kind of thing we really have to watch out for.
I used to do that. I'm ashamed to say, back in the 70s.
You know better now, though, of course.
We didn't know the first thing about drug counseling, but we got in because I think the principals were winking at us. They knew what we were there for, and they wanted us there, but
I think you're right. It's a shame. There was a case last year I remember writing about. A young woman in West Virginia spoke up because an evangelist came in supposedly to talk to the kids about sex. But again, no expertise. The woman had no expertise in this area, and all she did was preach. We really have to look out for that kind of thing. I mean, not only is that unconstitutional, but it just imparts bad information to young people, and that's we don't
right.
want that.
I mean, the purpose of our public schools is to educate, not to indoctrinate, but so many principals don't seem to understand that.
We do still have problems with that around the country. You're absolutely right.
Now, your final chapter is called Conclusion, Run Your Own Life, Not Mine. You want to talk about that?
That's where I sort of summarize the main arguments in the book. We have different types of entities in this country. The government runs certain services. Some things they contract out. There are religiously affiliated groups like hospitals and colleges and social service agencies. And then there are private secular businesses. And there are different rules that you apply to these entities. And I think what I'm trying to do in that last chapter is explain how we can resolve some of these conflicts, respect as many rights as possible, yet make it clear that a house of worship, for example, is going to play by a different set of rules than a store. The house of worship doesn't have to give you its services. They don't have to preside at your wedding. They don't even have to let you come in the front door. But a store does.
So under the Civil Rights Act, Interstate Commerce Clause, totally different, right?
Yes, exactly. And we have public accommodation laws in this country that govern those types of activities, but religious groups have been exempt from those. And I think that's right. I mean, nobody wants to... You hear the religious right talk all the time, our clergy are going to be forced to preside at same-sex marriages. Well, of course they're not. Not as long as we have a First Amendment. They'll always have the right to decide who they want to give those services to. But when they're hiring people for programs that are funded, in many cases, by the taxpayer, then they have to give those workers decent health care and not impose religion on them. So we just play by these different circumstances, different rules, and I think we can get through this.
And we do have this other issue of so many mergers between public hospitals or secular hospitals and the Catholic Church. And as you say, so often these hospitals have massive infusions of funding, and yet they want to discriminate.
That's a real concern. Of course, they impose Catholic directives on the healthcare. They don't allow any abortions. They won't distribute birth control. And they meddle in people's end-of-life decisions through their living wills. They impose Catholic doctrine on those people, whether they want it or not. And that's a shame because, as you point out, these are massively taxpayer-funded institutions. I mean, they're quasi-religious at best, yet they're always willing to talk about how they're really not that religious when they want your tax money. But when the government comes at them with regulations, then suddenly they say, oh, you can't do that. We're religious. They want to have it both ways, and that's just not fair.
In your book, at the end, you write that on the one hand, religion has been losing the cultural war over history. Birth control, abortion, divorce, they're losing their power to control homosexuality, censorship, and so on. But on the other hand, doesn't that make them, in the short run, more dangerous? They're like a wounded animal that doesn't like losing, and they want to take everything they can down with it. Don't we need to be more vigilant now as we are nearing the end of these culture wars?
Yes, I think you've put your finger right on it. That's exactly right. They've lost so much ground just in the past 30 or 40 years that they're lashing out, and we need to be aware of that and stand up even more for our rights.
Thank you so much, Rob Boston. And his new book is Taking Liberties, Why Religious Freedom Doesn't Give You the Right to Tell Other People What to Do. Thanks again.
Thank you.
Thank you, Dave McCann, for producing and engineering the show. If you want to know more about Free Thought Radio, you can find out everything on our website, ffrf.org/news/radio.
Join us at ffrf.org or phone 1-800-335-4021. You can ask for a sample of our newspaper, Free Thought Today. The March issue is just about out. And you can learn a lot more on those pages than we can fit into this radio program. Tune in next week for more Rational Radio and Blasphemous Broadcasting.
Free Thought Radio is a production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, FFRF.org. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews brought to you by Annie Laurie Gaylor and Dan Barker.
I hope someday you'll join us.